Welcome back, ghosts, ghouls, and things that go bump in the night. You probably remember that last week we heard the first half of the story Dagon by H.P. Lovecraft. I imagine you're all as curious as I am to see what exactly the author is going to find in this deep, dark cavern, and why it's causing him to want to end his own life. So, without further ado, let's dive back in to Dagon by H.P. Lovecraft. All at once, my attention was captured by a vast and singular object on the opposite slope, which rose deeply about 100 yards ahead of me, an object that gleamed whitely in the newly bestowed rays of the ascending moon. It was merely a gigantic piece of stone, I soon assured myself, but I was not conscious of a distinct impression that its contour and position were not altogether the work of nature. A closer scrutiny filled me with the sensations I cannot express, for despite its enormous magnitude and its position in an abyss which had yawned at the bottom of the sea since the world was young, I perceived beyond a doubt that the strange object was a well-shaped monolith whose massive bulk had known the workmanship, and perhaps the worship, of thinking and living creatures. Dazed and frightened, yet not without a certain thrill of the scientist's or archaeologist's delight, I examined my surroundings more closely. The moon, now near its zenith, shone weirdly and vividly above the towering steeps that hemmed in the chasm, and revealed the fact that a far-flung body of water flowed at the bottom, winding out of sight in both directions, and almost lapping my feet as I stood on the slope. Across the chasm, the wavelets washed at the base of the cyclopean monolith, on whose surface I could now trace both inscriptions and crude sculptures. The writing was in a system of hieroglyphics unknown to me, and unlike anything I had ever seen in books, consisting for the most part of conventionalized aquatic symbols such as fishes, eels, octopi, crustaceans, mollusks, whales, and the like. Several characters obviously represented marine things which are unknown to the modern world, but whose decomposing forms I had observed in the ocean-risen plain. It was a pictorial carving, however, that did hold me most spellbound. Visibly plain across the entwining water on account of their enormous size were an array of bas-reliefs whose subjects would have excited the envy of Dor. I think that these things are supposed to depict men, at least a certain sort of men, though the creatures were shown disporting like fishes in waters of some marine grotto, or paying homage at some monolithic shrine which appeared to be under the waves as well. Of their faces and forms, I dare not speak in detail, for the mere remembrance makes me grow faint. Grotesque beyond the imaginations of a Poe or a Bulwer were the damnably human in general outline, despite webbed hands and feet, shockingly wide and flabby lips, glassy bulging eyes, and other features less pleasant to recall. Curiously enough, they seemed to have been chiseled badly out of proportion with their scenic background, for one of the creatures was shown in the act of killing a whale, represented but as a little larger than himself. I remarked, as I say, their grotesqueness and strange size, but in a moment I decided that they were merely the imagery gods of some primitive fishing or seafaring tribe, some tribe whose last descendant had perished eras before the first ancestor of the Piltdown or Neanderthal man was born. Awestruck at this unexpected glimpse into a past beyond the conception of the most daring anthropologist, I stood, musing, whilst the moon cast strange reflections on the silent channel before me. Then, suddenly I saw it. With only a slight churning to mark its rise to the surface, the thing slid into view above the dark waters. Vast, polythemus-like, and loathsome, it darted like a stupendous monster of nightmares to the monolith, about which it flung its gigantic scaly arms, and while it bowed its hideous head and gave vent to certain measured sounds. I think I went mad then. Of my frantic ascent of the slope and cliff, and of my delirious journey back to the stranded boat, I remember little. I believe I sang a great deal, and laughed oddly when I was unable to sing. I have indistinct recollections of a great storm sometime after I reached the boat. At any rate, I know that I heard peals of thunder and other tone which nature utters only in her wildest moods. When I came out of the shadows, I was in a San Francisco hospital, brought thither by the captain of the American ship which I had picked up my boat in mid-ocean. In my delirium, I had said much, but found that my words had been given scant attention. Of any land upheaval in the Pacific, my rescuers knew nothing, nor did I deem it necessary to insist upon a thing which I knew they would not believe. Once I sought out a celebrated ethnologist and amused him with my peculiar questions regarding the ancient Philistine legend of Dagon, the fish god, but soon perceiving that he was hopelessly conventional, I did not press my inquiries. It is at night, especially when the moon is gibbous and waning, that I see the thing. I tried morphine, but the drug has given only transient surcease and has drawn me into its clutches as a hopeless slave. So now I am to end it all, having written a full account for the information or for the contemptuous amusement of my fellow man. I often ask myself, if I could not at all have been a pure phantasm, a mere freak of fever as I lay sun-stricken and raving in the open boat after my escape from the German man of war. This I ask myself, but ever does it come here before me, a hideously vivid vision in reply. I cannot think of the deep sea without shuddering at the nameless things that may be, at this very moment, crawling and floundering on its slimy bed, worshipping their ancient stone idols, and carving their own detestable likenesses on the submarine obelisk of water-soaked granite. I dream of a day when they may rise above the billows to drag down in their reeking talons the remnants of a puny, war-exhausted mankind, of a day when the land shall sink and the dark ocean floor shall ascend amidst universal pandemonium. The end is near. I hear a noise at the door, as if some immensely slippery body lumbered against it. It shall find me. God, that hand, the window, the window. And that, listeners, is the story Dagon by H.P. Lovecraft. So, do you think our narrator actually saw Dagon? Something he was never meant to see? Or do you think it was merely the fever of a shipwrecked man gone slightly insane? Either way, I don't think I'm going to go out on the ocean anytime soon. After all, better safe than sorry. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. As always, you can find me on various socials by searching Haunted Horror Historian. Or, if there's something you'd like to tell me directly, or maybe you've seen Dagon yourself, you can always send me an email at hauntedhorrorhistorian@gmail.com. that's all for this week. So, until next time, listeners, stay spooky, and remember, sometimes it's more than just a story.